The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the guests and not necessarily those of KICI Radio or Extend the Dream Foundation.
Hello and welcome to the Situation Room. In this program, KICI takes a look at issues affecting our community, local government, health, the environment, economics, services, nonprofits and organizations, and more. Segments are broadcast throughout the week and also on our SoundCloud site and Facebook page. This program has welcomed from time to time commentary and insights from Professor Nicholas Johnson, now retired from teaching law at the University of Iowa. Before that, his career took him to both coasts and in the service of the federal government, at one time as an advisor to President Jimmy Carter, and most notably, the Federal Communications Commissioner in the Lyndon B. Johnson administration. Incidentally, he played a major role in enacting the policy that enabled the existence of public communications, public broadcasting, public radio, low-power FM, and community radio. Once again, we welcome Nicholas Johnson back to our program for another commentary today on current events and current issues. Nicholas Johnson, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Holly.
Today we're going to hear another on the topic that has been, I think, uppermost on a lot of listeners' minds, a lot of people's minds, and that is the current situation of American politics and society. What do we want America to become? And I think that's the name of a column you recently had published.
3 months ago, I think.
So what do we want America to become?
Well, I think we're in the process of making a choice, and I'm not sure the word we is appropriate since we really have two Americas today, one that either with full understanding and desire or out of total unawareness are going down the authoritarian road. And would prefer that to what we had, say, back 1950s, 1980s, in terms of a cooperative democracy. And you think about Republican presidents, Eisenhower, Reagan, other leaders of the Republicans, Bob Dole, George Bush, John McCain, Iowa's Herbert Hoover. These people were not angry. They were not trying to create divisiveness. Were not attacking people. They were aware that in order to be a president, there are essential skills that you have to have and norms that you have to live by, in addition to the Constitution and whatever laws are enacted by Congress. And that's kind of been lost today. The Republican Party in the House is seemingly incapable of passing even the laws that it has written and proposed. That's part of it. And there's a kind of mean-spiritedness, it seems to me, associated with a lot of what is coming out of our legislature. As Todd Dorman of the Gazette calls it, the Golden Dome of Wisdom in the state capitol. So when we think about what we want, on the one hand, you wonder sometimes the extent to which phrase I use is it's all about the money. Money is, I mean, it's essential. Everybody needs it. I think there's reason to have a universal basic income. There's a spirit in the movie Wall Street, Gordon Gekko, asserting that, quote, greed is good. People who say life is a game in which whoever dies with the most toys wins. President Coolidge said, the chief business of America is business. And that's one way to go. You cut back on the services and support provided to those who are most in need, and you increase the wealth and decrease the taxes of those in the top 10 or 20% in terms of their wealth. That's one of the choices. Those values are represented in a number of places. There's our Declaration of Independence, asserts that all persons are created equal, endowed with unalienable rights, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. The United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights includes the right to food, clothing, housing, and medical care for those who consider themselves good, obedient Christians following Jesus' commands. In Matthew 25, we read what's almost word for word, what's in the UN's Universal Declaration of Human Rights, that we provide for those in need food, water, clothes, health, health care, shelter, visits to those in prison. That was a part, at least, of what we used to call Iowa Nice. So that's one choice, one way to follow. The other is to say, no, I got mine, Jack. Your problems aren't my problems.
I was just going to ask, and you've brought it up, but you mentioned that there was this, a divide. There are two Americas, kind of a mean-spiritedness and a tend toward wish for authoritarianism. And I was thinking, well, what does economics play in that? Are there two Americas economically, or maybe a spectrum of Americas? And have there been other times in American history where there has been this eruption of anger or mean-spiritedness or anxiety among the general public? Some are mean-spirited, some are not, but they're obviously reacting to something that they feel is a threat. I guess that's a really long question, but I think you can handle
it. Well, of course, there's the American Revolution. In the post-World War II years, there was a lot of dignity associated with being a union member, earning a wage that enabled you to buy a house and a car and be able to send your kid to college and whatever. Today, that's no longer possible. There was an overt opposition to unions, and the percentage of people in the commercial sector who belong to unions is now drastically declined from what it was then.
Can you explain a little bit about when that happened and what the forces were that led to that decline?
Well, one highlight of it was when Reagan went after the air traffic controller union. We're still today feeling the impact of that with all these close calls and crashes and doors falling out of airplanes. That was a part of it. Now we have this going on in Iowa. The head of the Teamsters Union in Iowa is going to go to bat, take on the Republican legislature, which pretty overwhelming thing the legislature wanted to do. It wanted to give power to the employers, the power not to turn over a list of the workers to the union so that they could go on strike. It's very open and obvious what it is they're trying to do. But the net result is we have a impoverished class, and ironically, the Republicans are doing a better job of appealing to it than the Democrats, because the Democrats have not been all that successful themselves in demonstrating for those in poverty, those in the working class, what it is they're going to do for them.
I just want to butt in right here and mention that as far as KICI is concerned, we are not partisan. Obviously, a lot of the content and commentary we hear is going to skew one way or another, and that's fine. People will present their opinions, but I just want to make that clear to listeners that the station does not have a partisan endorsement. And I was going to then ask, since you had been critical of the Republican Party, or at least the current Republican Party, I know you've also had critiques of the Democrats, and so I wanted to ask your analysis or why you felt that the Democratic Party then had not filled the void that people were looking for in terms of economic and social support.
Well, as Elizabeth Barrett Browning put it, let me count the ways.
Okay.
I mean, for many of the in the leadership, Iowa is literally a part of the nation that is just flyover country so far as they are concerned. I doubt that there are very many members of the National Democratic Party leadership who've ever been on a farm, let alone really talk face-to-face with farmers about their challenges, or maybe even ever been in a manufacturing plant and talked to workers. So that's a part of the problem. The other is that in the United States, last time I saw a map, 80% of our 3,500 or so counties, 80% of them are majority Republican. In Iowa, it's, I think, 93 counties out of our 99 counties that are Republican. And the Democrats somehow feel that they can be a national party by having strength only within the cities, and that they can go to Wall Street for the money to run the campaigns and go to the left street out in California and West Coast for the votes, and that that's going to be enough to win elections. And it just isn't. So that's a problem. And then they're kind of caught up, as everybody in politics are these days, with this, it's all about the money. Mm-hmm. I mean, I keep getting emails by the dozens every day. Mm-hmm. And what are they writing me about? Please send me more money. I support a limited number of candidates, but I can't fund every congressional district. They're not talking about policy. They're not talking about what they're going to do for the poor and the working class. They're just saying, send me more money. That's a problem within our system. That's what we've let it become. The net result is that there are a lot of folks who can quite fairly say, well, you know, what have you done for me lately? And part of it is for the Democrats a problem now that to the extent they have a positive story to tell, they're not telling it. And so Republicans can run TV commercials about how inflation has never been higher and unemployment has never been more awful and prices of gasoline are up. Well, all those things are not true. But the Democrats are not making an effort to, go down what they could be talking about that they have been doing. So I've got a number of problems with the Democrats as well as the Republicans. I know you guys are nonpartisan. That's the way it should be. I wish it was with Fox News as well. Yeah, that's that.
Well, I remember, this was long ago, but I remember a discussion when Howard Dean was running way back when, and there was something called the 50-state plan, wanting to campaign and build up the Democratic Party in all 50 states. And then there was the theory that, no, you put your money where the population is and you're going to win. That's one question or one consideration. The other is that, of course, you have the Electoral College, and there's a lot of complaint about it's not fair because the more rural states have oversized capacity to influence the outcome of elections. I know there's an effort afoot to create a national popular vote for the presidential race. But then you have people on all sides of the political spectrum in the less populated areas of the country saying, well, wait a minute, what happens if we're completely ignored? Do we become what happened to West Virginia? Did we become what's happening to Iowa's water? What happens? Another open-ended question for you. Also, what you see as the remedy.
One of the major problems we have is that Congress starts off talking about appropriations for programs and writing legislation and whatever. I think that's going about it backwards. I think that what we need to do is to start off by what kind of an America do we want? Do we want one that is totally focused on business? Like President Cal Coolidge said, the business of America is business. Gordon Gekko in Wall Street, the movie, says greed is good. I think there's too much of it's all about the money. I got a medical bill. I won't identify the source. I'm not out to do them in. But it included the item, miscellaneous $2,000. Now, you know, it's one thing for a auto mechanic to charge you a little extra for the rags they use to wipe off the grease and everything, but $2,000 that is not itemized, that you can simply call miscellaneous and run through a health insurance program? And then, what's this greed brought us? You'd think we would be the best off people in the world. And yet America's ranking is worse than its peer nations in almost every measure. Life expectancy, infant mortality is higher, pregnant teens is higher, obesity is more of a problem here, heart and lung disease. And then prescriptions. I mean, there was one the other day I noted that in Turkey you could buy the same medicine as you buy here, but in the United States it was 8 times as much half the same thing was in Turkey. So what's our greed bought us? So we have to think about what is it we want. Let's start with the program that we'd like to have. Would we like to have clean water? Would we like to have poor kids fed during the summer months when they're out of school? Would we like to have health care for all? You got to talk about that. And you begin there. You don't begin with the money. The next thing then you have to do, kind of step two after you've decided that, is getting rid of the language and the labels like capitalism and socialism and sort of knee-jerk reactions to that. What we ought to be asking is, what are the goods and services and personnel necessary to create what we want America to be? And if we don't have them, then propose that we get them and do what we need to provide the personnel when we have shortages in mental health care and many other things. Let's come up with a program to deal with it if we want to deal with it and make our country that kind of a country and see if we can improve some of our ranking amongst the other civilized nations of the world. The third step, even then, doesn't yet start with a House appropriation bill. It starts by figuring out what are the needed resources, personnel, also money, and how available are those resources? And physical facilities, personnel, transportation, you know, whatever's necessary to execute what it is we want to become. And then figure out where we can get that. And it's not just government. In fact, the value of the hours that volunteers, unpaid volunteers, put into programs that benefit the public is estimated at billions of dollars in value, often exceeding what the federal programs themselves cost the tax. So you take a look at what individuals are available as volunteers, what nonprofit organizations are already working in this area and could be recruited. What could schools and colleges do, maybe with additional instruction or setting up institutes of one kind and another? Libraries. I remember when I came back to Iowa City from Washington, and I was interested in video, having been on the FCC. It was the public library in Iowa City that provided video equipment to anybody in Iowa City who wanted to do video and put it on the public access cable channel. Libraries are remarkable institutions, and they're public-spirited businesses. I remember reading a story about a fellow who was reading the literature that he interpreted as meaning that up to, at that time, so it'd be higher now, but not by much, that up to about $75,000 a year, more money brings more happiness. After $75,000 a year, it doesn't really. There are things you can do with it, but you're not going to be food insecure. You're not going to be able to pay for an automobile. So anyhow, he decided he would pay all of his employees and cut his own salary to the $75,000 a year. You don't often run into that kind of an offer, There are similar things. And some of the technology companies are providing child care on premises to make it easier for parents of children to come to work and not be worrying about their kids, or more generous health care programs. So there are many places we can go to find the resources. Once we know the kind of country we want to build, and we've identified the goods and services and personnel necessary to create that kind of an America, and we've reviewed all the possible available resources outside of the government, then we can figure out, okay, and how much of the cost of doing this, bringing us to the kind of country we want, how much of that is going to have to be handled by taxpayers. But you don't start off by asking how much are we going to appropriate out of the federal treasury for some program that we haven't yet thought through. I think that would make an enormous difference in our country, and it'd make us all happier and healthier, and would help to break down the affirmative effort to build divisiveness and hatred. And think about the immigration business. Essentially, everybody inside the United States who is not of Native American descent is either an immigrant or the children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren or great-great-great-grandchildren of immigrants. My mother's father was an immigrant. My father's father was an immigrant. And you have businesses that are going to the government and saying, look, we need these immigrants in our business. You're going to shut down, close the borders entirely, and nobody's going to be able to immigrate to the United States? Well, you're going to have to get by with a lot fewer vegetables from California, will tell you that. I think there are a lot of things we can do, but it really comes back to, what is it we want? Do we really put money as the most important thing in our lives and forget about what Jesus taught and the UN Declaration of Human Rights requires and our Declaration of Independence spelled out? You're willing to ignore all of that and just go for the biggest dollar? That's what we've got to decide, and when we decide it, then there's some hope for the country.
We're speaking with Professor Nicholas Johnson, retired from teaching law at the University of Iowa and Federal Communications Commissioner in the Lyndon B. Johnson administration. Just one final question, just a little bit of time left, but I'm wondering in practical terms, what might be done in Iowa? What could the average person listening to this think of doing?
Well, I think get active in politics. Make sure you're registered. Make sure you know where you vote. Volunteer to work within your party. There are lots of tasks that need doing. And join organizations that are devoted to trying to improve things. Free lunch programs. We have a free medical clinic in Iowa City. We've got housing for the homeless. Programs of various denominations of churches. And get to know your neighbors. We've kind of fallen into, and partly because of the pandemic, you know, we're not supposed to be meeting with groups of people and risking what for those of us who are in our 90s could be very serious disease. Just look around, donate money to organizations that are trying to make a better life for everybody. And if you can volunteer with them, so much the better. And of course, write your legislators and write them about some of these issues. Pick the ones that are of greatest importance to you and let them hear from you. That can make a difference. And you can be, I consider myself bipartisan. I mean, I have close friends who are Republicans, and there are many members of the Republican Party left who are like the Republicans I worked with in the 1960s, or that President Reagan and the Speaker of the House had this wonderful relationship between the two of them, even though they were on opposite sides. The way they put it was that they were friends after 6 p.m. In other words, during the day, they were on opposite sides of the issues, but after 6, they'd get together, and some of them would get together after the Congress closed down.
I'll put in a plug also for food pantries. I know that the food pantries in the area are experiencing serious need, and people can put in an extra canned good or two. That does make a difference. We've been speaking with Professor Nicholas Johnson, again retired from teaching law at the University of Iowa, Federal Communications Commissioner under the Johnson administration, and part of other administrations, including the Carter administration. He's been talking about what do we want America to be, and you can read that and more of his columns in his online work, from DC to Iowa.blogspot.com. That's from DC, number two, from DC to Iowa.blogspot.com, or NicholasJohnson.org. Nicholas Johnson, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Holly. It's always a pleasure to visit with you.
You've been listening to The Situation Room. These segments are broadcast throughout the week, and we also upload them to our SoundCloud site and post the links and links to more resources on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/ICLocalRadio. Or in the Facebook search bar, enter KICI Iowa City Local Radio. If you have suggestions, questions, or information, email us at info@kiciradio.org. I'm Holly Hart for KICILP 105.3 FM, Iowa City.